podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Welcome to A Choir Kid's Dream, where I, DJ Melody, will teach you how to songwrite, record, and market your music. All right, so today we have Uncle Riley. He is my uncle that I was talking about that I do a lot of music with, and I decided to bring him on today because he helped me get really good within a year. So unfortunately, no Bass Boy John, but he is really good at guitar and recording, and he's been in a lot of bands. So I'm really excited for you to get to know him. So Uncle Riley, tell me about your first time picking up a guitar, like how you fell in love with it and all that, because you're really good at it. So I want to know.
Well, first of all, let's give credit to Bass Boy John, even though he's not here. We're all thinking about him. My first experience with guitar would have been when I was very small, and there wasn't many things in my house that I felt more interesting than a guitar. I love the strings. I love the shape of the instrument and the sound hole. And so, yeah, I fell in love with the idea of just hitting it and making noise.
I would say probably riffing is really your big guitar talent there. So let me know, tell me more about different artists that you drew inspiration from to do that, any technique or anything. I'm really curious.
Well, in terms of guitar, I tend to like guitarists that are really good composers. In other words, they can write songs, but they also can write a lot of different guitar parts. If I had a Mount Rushmore of guitar players, probably I'd put Jimmy Page on there and Jerry Garcia and Pete Townsend, and I'd put Lindsey Buckingham on there because they're all very prolific composers of various guitar parts and music. Even though you don't think of Jerry as being a composer, what he came up with in terms of just different parts and tangents that he went off of, he was composing. And there's a lot of music there with those types of players.
Yeah, I can notice that you almost like sing with the guitar in the spaces that I'm not singing. I see a lot of the times you're moving your fingers up and down the bottom strings for kind of like riffs and stuff. So I think that's something really cool that we do together. Any other tips on doing that, or it's just kind of intuitive?
Well, when you say riffing, it's an interesting thing. You can get a really cool riff going, something that just bites your ear, that's kind of infectious, then you can build incredible amounts of music around something that simple. And it's almost like a root and a foundation for a song that just flowers in different directions. So really, that's a good way to start if you're going to write a song, is to come up with a catchy riff and then build around it. That can be a real interesting and successful way to write songs.
Yeah, I kind of put the chords around it too. And then even sometimes when I'm singing, sometimes you kind of harmonize the riffs with me. And I really like how we write songs together. It's really fun. So we actually have a couple songs that we're in the process of recording. So I know you've taught me how to use multi-track and all of that, but would you mind telling me about editing vocals, since this is a Choir Kid's Dream one? I know a lot of you guys are singers.
Well, that can kind of change with the project, and sometimes you want to approach mixing or editing a different way from another song just because you want to be different or you want it to sound different. I've had the most success with Logic Pro. I took up Pro Tools for a while because I have a day job. I don't, you know, really have the time. So back then, Pro Tools was kind of clunky. When I got back into it, when I had more time, you know, it was a lot easier to get into Logic Pro, which I think has an awful lot of features in it. And then the plugins and how the ease of the plugins, you know, from different manufacturers like UA and whatnot, they're really easy to use within Logic Pro. So that's a real go-to tool. There's all kinds of tricks, lots of approaches. Right now I'm into kind of crispy editing different vocal lines where I fade in and I fade out at the beginning of a phrase. And I think if you can do a lot of the editing and just plain mixing of volume levels, that solves a lot of EQ problems, and it solves a lot of compression and a lot of effects that are maybe overused. So I think you can get a cleaner sound sometimes by not using a lot of those things and just simply editing and mixing the volume of different tracks in the right way. And then having a versatility in the mix where you have some instruments are low end, and if someone is more of a high end vocalist, and you do something to set that off that's got, you know, a low end instrument or accentuated bass or something like that. So sometimes just the different instruments and parts that you use can balance out a mix. You don't necessarily need a bunch of plugins or different ways. It really is true that if you get something down and it's recorded well, then you don't have to mess with it too much. And that's really the best approach.
Yeah, I think you're right. DAW multi-track isn't always the best way to mix things. And I really like your advice about Logic Pro and maybe not exactly focusing too much on vocal effects like compression or auto-tune, but more focusing on volume and having highs and lows and sort of have it come off naturally, and even using maybe quirky types of ways to record with different boards you were talking about to sort of have different sounds rather than just do it the basic way by just going to the producer and having everything so clean cut. So would you say your goal is to try to release something on Spotify, like being able to edit everything on your own Logic Pro? Like, do you think that's possible?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can put your music up any place these days, you know, Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube, whatever. That's not really the issue. The issue is, first of all, getting it the way you want to before you put it up any place. And then, you know, probably making sure it's copyrighted and some of the things that you need to do to just kind of protect yourself. And then if something pops and people like it and it gets a following, you know, online, then that's wonderful. But you can always go play it live too. So there's a lot of ways that you can kind of promote your songs and whatnot. We're really lucky in this day and age. And I don't think any artist has to be a slave to a record company anymore. What they do is just as much marketing as anything else, but it's really easy to create a good quality recording with a decent amount of equipment in a home setting.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, taking the extra work to record and edit on your own. That way you're not confined to the box that a record company might put you in, or maybe you don't even get your songs out, kind of like you were talking about. That can happen sometimes. And I think it's a good point that you can always go back and re-record things later if, you know, it does become a hit online. And just sort of also realizing that it's permanent what you put out, and it's good to take time on it. Yeah, so we're even working on that our own right now with our harmonies on a song called Ascending Angels. And even one of the songs that we had that sounds pretty good right off the recording, Mismatched Practicality, we're kind of going back and realizing that it has too much auto-tune. So I might just go re-record it when it sounds really amazing. It's kind of like you were saying, when you have a really good vocalist, sometimes all they need is more tries or different volume or different highs and lows to balance it. So I really appreciate you talking about all that. So I was also wondering, I was talking about this in my songwriting episode, different inspirations that I have for harmonies, but who would you go to the most for that when you're thinking about who to get inspiration from and the types of harmonies that you should put in a song that you're writing?
I was lucky enough. I was born right in the middle of just amazing golden age of harmonies. There were so many bands that were into them. One of my first experiences with music that I can remember was listening to Scarborough Fair. The Everly Brothers, it's hard to beat them. There's a certain thing when you have kind of genes at work. There's inflections and different tones that people that are family members kind of have, different ways of talking that kind of translate into singing. And then it becomes easier when, and I think that also happens when you grow up with somebody kind of like Simon and Garfunkel or whatnot. So the Everly Brothers, Simon and Garfunkel, the Mamas and the Papas, Crosby, Stills and Nash, the Beatles, obviously. There are so many great harmony bands. I'm into one called the Cowsills that no one remembers, and they were a family band. Three of them are still going. Obviously R&B, there's a lot of harmonies. Also the Four Seasons, Frankie Valli, oh my gosh, this is so much. And I'm really into harmonies. I love them. I think they add to just any good song if you can figure out a place to put them in. And I think it's interesting how contemporary vocalists kind of you hear tracks these days and there are harmonies in them. You just don't think of them having harmony tracks, but they're kind of behind, you know, the music a little bit and more subtle. But I'm still a big fan of the old bands.
Yeah, so if you have a family member and you're looking to add more vocally to your music, maybe try to get them involved. It could be interesting, could be fun. That's what I did with Uncle Riley. So speaking of bands, tell me about your band experience.
Oh, well, I have kind of a sordid experience with bands. They're very hard things to keep together because people have so many different interests and they can grow apart after a while. My first band was a band called Lubiplex, and we didn't even have a four-track machine in my neighborhood. What we did is we had one stereo that recorded actually in stereo, and we got a stereo microphone from Radio Shack, and then we recorded whatever we could with basically one track of music, and then we used the second stereo and we pumped that through speakers and then used that as our second track, so that we had some instruments on a track playing through a set of stereo speakers, and then we used the second stereo to record in stereo and add tracks as those tracks were playing. It ended up turning out really interesting, but we played just really silly songs like Ice Dwarf and The Wrath of the Monk and Terminus 18, really crazy stuff like that you do when you're young. I had another band in the 90s for a short period of time, and we could never agree on the name, but it was called Cerebellum, and we were around for a little while, did a few gigs, and that was a lot of fun. But again, the drummer and the bass player wanted to play harder stuff, and I wanted to write, you know, more music that was kind of guitar based and had harmonies and things like that. So that was it. Then you grow up and you have to get a job, and then the bands become secondary.
All these things we do to keep bands together. It's always interesting to see how people make it work. You know, when someone's missing a bandmate or you need to get to recording and maybe you guys aren't all experienced. So that's really interesting. Yeah, but I would say you probably like performing a lot, right? Since you go to a lot of open mics. How would you say you transitioned yourself from someone who kind of always does bands into someone who is more solo and then recently duo with me?
I think that if you're writing songs, and I was the one in both my bands that wrote most of the songs, or at least the music to them, and lyrics too, but after a while, you know, if you're in a band, you maybe get sick of people going off and having beers while you're trying to figure out a part. And then you realize, well, I could kind of do all this myself. Although it's more fun to play with other people. It always is. But in terms of being productive and getting songs done and finished, sometimes it's better to work with just one other person. And there have been people like, Bella, I work really easy with you. We get things done pretty fast. People that kind of think the same way you do musically, that's where, you know, really famous, like, I was listening to something about REM the other day and how they work together, and they generally agreed about everything. And so there are other bands that are like that. Other bands fight and they seem to get things done too, but it's just it's easier when you're working on your own or just with one or two other people. Anything you do, when you're in a band, you're interactive, you're playing with other people, and that's a lot of fun. If you're playing on stage alone, but you have an instrument, a piano or a guitar, you're still interactive. You're just interactive with that instrument. So it still is like having someone else there in a way. That's how I always kind of think of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's a lot of pros and cons to both, kind of like you were talking about when you don't have as many people that you have to agree on something with, but then also maybe it's more stage presence having a band. You excited for that Christmas show we got coming up?
Oh yeah, sure. If we can get it together, that'd be great.
Yeah, that always happens. Any closing advice you have for people who are beginners to musicianship?
Yeah, keep playing. And the way to keep playing is to be interested in what you're playing. Otherwise, you won't keep playing. And the whole way to get better at anything is just to do it and to keep learning. But as Paul McCartney once said, there are no rules in music. And you can start from any one particular place and branch off into another. That, and just follow your instincts and your gut and your dreams.
All right. Thank you for coming on A Choir Kid's Dream, Riley Wales.